Commission turned the agenda around that we deal with the minutes of the last meeting. Sorry for the delay as they're setting up here. You have received a copy of the minutes. I hope you've read it. The minutes are before us. Are we ready with page 1 to adopt that? Page 2?
I just want to know what the page is.
Page 3? There were announcements where the committee was briefed on the draft program. Wait. I know what you want to say. Yeah. That's why I'm presenting it to you now. Let's look at the announcements where we were briefed on the draft program on the oversight in Mpumalanga. We'll continue that today. And then we also informed you that the management committee will finalize the program for the study tour. Honorable Father?
Chairperson. Attendance by committee members. I want to start off there. Number one, a lot of the ANC members are here. That doesn't mean they're attending. This is the first thing I want to talk about. But now the crucial part is, when they put me under the ANC of the Northern Cape, they put me in the Western Cape DA, which was acceptable because I'm on the northern part of the Western Cape.
Rebecca, but you should be here to do the correction.
You cannot put me in the ANC. This is a slap in the face. I can't take that. I'm sorry. Even the EFF,
yeah,
you say that.
Look, Honourable Father, we can't insult the ANC like
please.
That.
No,
let's
no,
take out.
No, if you can correct
we have
that.
A position available for you.
Honorable Chabango.
Chairperson, I think we should go through the minutes. And
that's what we've done.
No, you're bypassing.
Okay, what is it that you want to
go? Then at the end of the day, we must go to corrections. That is where he can raise his hand and say.
That's what we're doing now.
I'm up, but you...
You don't have your
the
on that.
Now, what do you want to correct, Honorable Chabango?
The very thing you can say that you're done by saying Father is a member of the ANC, whereas he's a member of the ANC.
Yeah.
Oh, is that all you wanted to correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's correct. But you agree that Bauda is a member of the DA?
You are now speaking people.
Do you agree that Bauda is a member of the DA? So why don't you correct that?
You have already underestimated.
I haven't.
Maybe they are underground. Correct. Correct that. You are doing the wrong thing. You say they are one of the
people. This coalition is really
waiting.
And our administration, they came with off the record, but the administration must make sure of these type of things. I know small things, but serious. When we get these type of things, we hope that it is correct. Now, small things like spelling mistakes, we can look at that, but putting a person in another party or in another province, this is taking it a bit too far. But I'm just mentioning that.
Klupeka is apologizing for that. Klupeka, please, what Honorable Pablo is raising is quite serious. The minute that I corrected, because I normally correct the minute that I corrected did not reflect that. I think what happened was that he had present the Honorable Mdedwa. So when he took him out, he left the other column, and then everything was mistakenly recorded.
Chairperson, you don't have to speak on behalf of the administration. Yes, he has apologized, and we have accepted the apology. Thank you.
Do you have any other corrections to the minutes?
No.
Can I then, Honorable Ntebe?
Let's agree with the correction as presented,
yeah,
and agree that in terms of the content and the form of the minutes, they reflect the true reflection. So
okay, so it's proposed by Honorable Taylor.
Yeah, amendment, I propose that to
Honorable Chabango?
Second.
Seconded. Honorable Faber? Third.
He's not going to be good today. It's raining.
How I wish it was a bit more than that. I think Western Cape really, Western Cape really needs it for their small cars. To our visitors here, the Bureau of Standards, please accept that as a standard for this select committee. We are a group of friends, as we are a group of colleagues working together as well. And we like that spirit that we have displayed here this morning. The agenda, honourable members, will be that we'll have the presentation from the South African Bureau of Standards. We will then have announcements, and there's going to be, again, the two areas as I reported earlier, which is the oversight to Mpumalanga, as well as the international study tour. And there's a third item as well, which is our participation in the local government tourism conference that's happening. We'll talk about that at the end under announcements. We appreciate your presence here today. Again, my apologies for not having joined you yesterday. It wasn't this committee, but I had to participate in a meeting on international relations that was important with our counterparts from the upper house in Nigeria. To our members of the South African Bureau of Standards, we want to welcome you. We have not had an opportunity to engage with you before. There are 13 entities under the Department of Trade and Industry, and we are now endeavoring to meet with all 13 entities in the 5 years that we have here. So the fact that we did not meet with you before does not mean that the Department of Trade and Industry have not done their oversight and communicated, or rather dialogued with us. We appreciate the work that you're doing, and we are looking forward to the briefing on your annual report for 2015-2016. I'll be with you in a second, Honourable Faber. Yeah. We noticed that your presentation document to us was received on time, which we appreciate. We also noticed that it's quite brief. So before you start, just to orient the members and prepare us properly, give us an indication of how much time you will take with the presentation. And what we'll do is that once you're through, we will allow the members to engage with the presentation. We would also then finally just request that as you do the presentation, you introduce the other members of your team. When we come to question time, I'll introduce to you the members of Parliament. Thank you very much again for being here. Before you do, let's just have Honourable Faber.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would just like to know for information, we had a presentation in the last 3 years. It was one of the entities that came to present to us on standards, but that was on imported product standards. I just don't have the entity's name. Can you perhaps just help me on that? I would like to just write that down as well, because the question to me then at that stage to them was, but we've got the SABS, and they explained to us why they are also an entity on standards. If you can just perhaps just give me a brief background on that I can recap, please.
I'm looking at Honourable Mintele. The name is on my tongue. It was Department of Public Works. They reported to us when they were with the annual report. Can you help us there?
Unit in the Department of Public Works that is looking at the quality of products in South Africa. It's a French name.
They look at the imports, the stands of all imports coming to South Africa, because my question to them was, why don't the SABS look at it? And they said the specific thing was that they're looking at world standards, and they are then looking if the product that comes in has got the correct standard, and then it only goes to something like that. So I'd if I'm correct.
The name will strike me and I'll come to you.
Thank you.
I'll somebody just need to scratch it. Please proceed with the presentation in the meantime.
Chairperson, if you will allow me, I will introduce the representatives of the SABS. I'm Vilma de Wit, I'm the Group Company Secretary at the SABS. And to my left, I have Mr. Ian Plaikis, the Executive for Corporate Services. And to my right, Ms. Boitumelo Mosoko, the Chief Financial Officer, the SABS. And then to my far right, Ms. Ella Kanyani Ndlovu, SABS board member. Also allow me for the record to just send her apologies for our Chief Executive Officer, Dr. Bonnie Mehlomakulu.
And the person from DTI as well.
Ms. Jody Scott, COO from the DTI, and Dr. Chengi Damona from the DTI.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm going to take the presentation as read. This is the same presentation that we submitted to the previous subcommittee for DTI. So we made no changes. I just added two last pages. So I'm going to take it as read, and our annual report is being available now for almost a year. We're 2 weeks away from the end of our new financial year already. So this is quite old information. So I'm going to try and go through the presentation very quickly, and then I'll rather take questions at the end. So I'm going to assume that it has been read. So on page one, we're just dealing with basically the legislative framework of the SABS, and I'm not going to go into that. I'm sure everybody is well aware of that. In 2008, there was a couple of acts that was promulgated. And the organization was split from NRCS and SABS, and we were no longer a regulator after that. So if I go on to page three, what I'm just highlighting there is the core business of the SABS. And if you look on the left-hand side, over there, you'll see standards development. So I didn't quite understand the earlier question because we're the only organization in the country that develops standards. And we do that in consultation with the industry, so we don't develop it on our own. And then obviously we have a strategic relationship with ISO, and we sell standards as well. It's a small part of our business, but nevertheless a very important part of it. It's the only part of the business that receives the government funding as well, and you'll see that on the left-hand side. That's about 23% of our total income that we get. On the right-hand side is our core business, and right on top of there, our certification. That's our flagship product at the moment, and that brings in about 75% of the revenue of the business at the moment. On the top one over there, you'll see testing, and that used to be the biggest revenue generator. However, our labs, some of our labs are outdated, and we do need to upgrade. And so we can't do all the tests that we are supposed to be in those labs. On the right-hand side, you see a design institute, a well-kept secret of the SABS. So we take SMMEs through basically from ideation right through the process and assist them there. Very, very small part of the business in terms of revenue, but very big in terms of impact on the economy and the country itself. And then on the bottom side, you see their training. We also do training for ISO standards, not all of them, just the big ones. And once again, very small part of our business, but very strategic in terms of the future part of the turnaround. I'm going to move on. Honourable Chair, I will take questions as I go on if members do have as well.
No, we'll take the questions.
At the end, okay, that's fine. On page four, you see our financial results over there. I'm just going to touch on the salient points over there, and that's basically the lowlights. Our government grant was reduced by 45 million rand, and then the uptake of local content, I can't say it's slow, it's almost non-existent at the moment. We have been geared up for that, so we've got staff in place for that. We've got systems in place for that, but that hasn't taken off. And then high cost of labor. In 2014-15 and 15-16, there was quite a huge increase in the labor costs budget. We increased salaries in that year by 8.5% and additional benefits of about 18.5% on top of that as well. And obviously we still have a ripple effect of that as well. So I'm going to go on to page 5. Those are basically just our indicators, and I'm going to go very, very quickly through them. I think it's self-explanatory in terms of that. The salient one that I'm going to highlight there is obviously the revenue. And once again, if I project that forward, it's still a challenge within the organization. And that's the only one that we're currently putting a lot of effort in as well. The rest of the indicators are healthy, so I'm going to move on to page 6. Once again, over there, we've achieved those indicators. I think worth mentioning is the number of SMEs that we've taken through the organization. We had a target of 50. We were able to exceed that. It was 120 that we actually did. And we managed to retain, I'm not saying we retained all our customers, the amount of customers we retained. So some left, and we obviously had new customers as well. Page 7, we retained all our accreditation during that year. You will know that we have local accreditation through SANEF, but we also have international accreditation through RBA and FFSC as well. We started our technology transformation journey, and we were quite ahead of schedule back then. The last 2 pages in the slide, I'll speak a bit more of that, where we are currently as an organization. And then the very last of the indicators on page 8, the very last one you'll see there in terms of customer centricity, the culture, we rated ourselves 0 on that. It is not quite true. If we had to put a number to it, it would probably be about 70% in terms of what we achieve. However, within the SABS, we sell trust. And this is one of those things that we wanted people to be able to measure very accurately. And it is an area that is a bit fuzzy and fluffy. And so it was very difficult to measure the action plans. And hence, because of that, we just gave it a flat 0. And that affected the performance indicators for the individuals as well, accordingly. And then I'm going to go over to page 9. That's basically where we are. I thought I'd use this opportunity. You know, it is 2 years since the annual report that you have in front of you, and to just share with you where we are right now. So we have started digitalizing our business. Previously, engagements with the SABS was a very manual, laborious process, filling out a form and dropping it off. Right now, our customers can engage with us electronically, so they go onto the system, and they can then start the process over there, and they track it electronically as well. So they'll get system-generated information where the application is throughout the process. The next step of that, obviously, is to take that to a mobile application as well. But we have very rich BI tools that we have that has enabled us to make informed decisions and to turn our business around. So all our indicators for the current financial year, we will be achieving all of them, once again, except the revenue. And there's no doubt in our minds that by the end of next financial year, the revenue would have been turned around as well. So on the next page, I've just given you an example there, page 10, in terms of the application. One of the other things that we have engaged as well is that we've signed a strategic relationship with ICASA. So you know there's a lot of electronic goods entering the market that is inferior quality. And so we'll be doing that certification on behalf of them as well. And once again, we've digitalized that business. So in the past, what would happen is a customer would come, bring his product, give a certificate of compliance to ICASA. They would hand it over to us. We would then do very minimum stuff to verify that. What we're going to be doing now is retest that or do witness testing in those labs where they say that the product has been. But over and above that, instead of that manual process, now the customer anywhere in the world will engage with us electronically. So they'll start the process on our system and they can track it end to end as well. To our knowledge, this is the first in the world. That's certainly the feedback we're getting from the likes of HP and Apple and so on. So that's quite exciting stuff. The very last page you see in front of you is our website that will literally be going live. You're the first persons to see just a snapshot of it. It will be going live in the next week or two. If you look at our current website, it looks pretty much like the weather outside, very gray, dull, and we are changing that completely and making it a bit more vibey and certainly more user-friendly as well. So, Honorable Chair, I hand it over to the members for questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much. When you started off, I was a bit worried, but you have done well in terms of referring us to the pages all the time. Before I recognize Honorable Faber, let me just make three comments. The first is to say, Honorable Faber, that company in public works is Agrima S.A. Agrima, with a hyphen on the E. That's the first thing. The second thing is to say that you can anticipate, you're reporting to a select committee of parliament here. What we're interested in is a little bit more detail on exactly how the money was spent. Because of the poor management of finances in government entities, we are, as this fifth administration, giving much more serious attention to that. So you can anticipate questions from members related thereto. But in your future presentations, please make sure that we have that.
Thank you.
The third thing that I want to say, through you, Sir Raj, is that if we do not have the opportunity to engage with you again very soon, we will request that you make documents available to us anyhow without appearing before the select committees, just so that we have that for us, and on that basis we can then look at whether there is need to summon you to Parliament or to acknowledge the good work that you're doing. The final remark that I just want to make is to say that you are quite right in drawing the distinction between what you are doing as the Bureau of Standards and what Agrima SA is doing. So for members like Honorable Chabangu, who is new, if you want to get documentation on Agrima SA, Ms. Dini Zulu, you see her, you can ask her to give you that documentation on the agreement. No, I wanted to get her attention so that we don't have Honorable Mahwebu, you would be in that category as well if you want to get it. I'm sure that Grace, in cooperation with Martins, and the reason why I'm referring to her is because it's public works, it's not the public property, that you then get that documentation. So we won't have any questions on that for now, other than to say that we have appreciated very much the work that Agrima SA is doing as a separate entity within the Department of Public Works, and we know that you are doing the bigger part of the work within the Department of Trade and Industry. Honorable Faber?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Yes, I think it was Agrima, but I think there was also the National NRSC, National Regulator Compulsory Certification. I think they were here as well. And I wanted to know, because to me, you know, I am not a subject matter expert on this. This is not my forte, but somehow we have to understand where does Agrima fall in, where does SABS, as well as then the NRCS.
because it seems to me that there's a lot of overlapping on this, and this was my question to them then. Aren't they overlapping on what the SABS are already doing? Because of something like, I think it was that we were talking about import products and the quality of import products, and I think they were looking at that, of the import products, if it are allowed to be distributed or marketed in South Africa, these type of things. So it was that as well as on products as well, meaning like wines, etc. Now there's also the NRSC, and they're doing very similar jobs. So I would like to actually see the three things. I like what they call in Afrikaans beeldspraak. I want to see the thing in front of me, and I want to understand, okay, SABS are doing that. Agrima are doing this. And this is why they are not two entities doing almost the same thing, because then we define the whole reason of logic behind it. So if a presenter or perhaps of our staff that might have more knowledge, just give us a small overview on that and maybe help me getting more knowledge on that, because I think some of our colleagues here were not here the previous time as well. I know I see two new members here that was not here, and I think it will make it will enlighten us with some knowledge. Thank you.
Okay, you have the question. We're going to take three and then allow you to answer. Can we have a second hand? Honorable Huebo. Sorry, Honorable Faber is from the Northern Cape. We are here in this committee representing provinces. That's the difference between us and the National Assembly. So in the questions also you'll hear us saying, but what is SABS doing in Gauteng? Because we come from the provinces. So he's not on Cape.
We don't see the SABS in Kimberley, etc. I saw the offices in Bloemfontein, I think in Kerk or Voortrek, a long time ago. And that was like a lot of money of the SABS.
Also talk to us about your national footprint.
Yeah.
Honorable Mahwebu is from the Eastern Cape.
Thank you, Chairperson. On slide number 4, I note that there is a slower uptake of local content verification. And I think the presenter has indicated that despite that the systems and the staff is in place, unfortunately, there's still this slower uptake. Now, I just wanted to find out, what is it that you're doing, you know, to address this? You know, and if you're doing anything about it, can you share it with us? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chabango is from the Free State.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members from SABS. My simple question would be, do you regulate that Hong Kong or imitations do not come to South Africa, especially in the Free State, because everything there is an imitation. My second question would be, how do you market yourself? I've seen that you've just introduced your website. But in the past, we see everything written SABS approved. And you feel very proud not knowing what is SABS approved. But if it was written like that, you would feel proud that I'm buying the product that has been approved by South Africa. Nowadays, you don't see those things. Thank you.
That will be the questions for the first round. I think we'll take two more rounds after this. Please.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and some of my colleagues will assist me in answering those questions. I think before I start with question one, if I may just deal with the Chairperson's comment about our finances and how that's spent. We are very proud that we've had a clean audit for the last 4 years, and we're definitely on track for the next one as well. So we take pride in how we spend our money, and we welcome any questions around that as well. We have brought our CFO with us as well to deal with those questions. On the very first question, Honorable Chair, I can't answer that question in terms of the visuals because I only have a mandate to speak on behalf of the SABS. The DTI is present here, and all three entities, you know, NRCS, SANUS, and ourselves reporting to them. So I think they'd be in a better position to answer that question, if I may. The second part of the question was around Kimberley. No, we don't have an office there. Our footprint, we do have a national footprint, but we service nationally. So we do have offices and labs in Pretoria. 90% of our business is at the head office. But we do have in the Western Cape as well, and there we have a food and water lab. It's the only one that we have actually outside of Gauteng. And we service the Kimberley area as well. In fact, just 2 weeks ago, we met with the local government there, and we're signing up about 200 customers via them as well. So we're very active in the region. And in fact, we're active in all regions. On the second question, local content, I'm going to hand over to our CFO to answer that.
Okay, thank you. I mean, just to add on to what Ian was saying in terms of our national footprint, we also have an office in Durban that services certification. We have a mining and minerals division where we service the mines and we test for coal. And the location of those is in Secunda, Middleburg, and Richards Bay. So that's where we have our coal operations. We also have automotive testing, and the automotive testing happens in the East London area. So we have an automotive testing lab there. So that is the, you know, the additional facilities that we have.
Thank you very much. There's still the other questions. Okay. Do you want to respond
and then,
to the...
And then on the local content verification side, when the instruction, you know, came out on the local content verification side, and the mandate was given to the SABS by the Department of Trade and Industry to perform local content verification, we as the SABS, you know, duly set up the office, and the intention, you know, initially was that this division would be sustaining division. Now, in terms of the procurement that has been happening and the verification that is, you know, that is supposed to happen, there hasn't been much activity there. As the SABS, we have engaged with the state-owned entities. We have engaged. You know, we sent out the letters. We've had the engagements. And maybe just to maybe retract and just explain to the members how the process works. In that we have designated industries where local content is supposed to happen. You're looking at your rolling stock, you're looking at your clothing and textile. And the intention of putting, you know, the policy in place was in line with, you know, economic, you know, stimulus for in the manufacturing sector. Now, ever since we started, we haven't really, done much in this space. Even though we have engaged, this issue has been raised with the portfolio committee on trade and industry. We had a colloquium. We had three engagements on this issue last year. One of the key issues was around who pays for the local content. The verification. Now, that matter was then taken on, you know, the matter was then taken to the Department of Trade and Industry and the National Treasury to resolve. So the last time we engaged on this issue, the plan was for the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry to send a letter to the Minister of Finance so that this matter can be resolved. So on our side, we did set up the office. We did engage, you know, with the state-owned entities and also with the suppliers. What we've also done is we provided commentary when the triple PFA was being revised, and it was issued on the 20th of January of this year. We provided our commentary, you know, to the National Treasury on how this issue can be clarified. But unfortunately, you know, with every process, you know, they did, you know, it's still there that, you know, verification must happen, but the issue around the payment is still not clarified. So currently, that's the issue that is a contentious one.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to, I think there was an indication there from DGR that you wanted to speak on that last year thing.
Thank you, Chair. To come to the question of the structure of the South African quality infrastructure, if I can call it that. We have the SABS, which sets the standards. Then we have what we call SANAS, South African National Accreditation Services, that make sure that most of the role players in this field are competent to do what they say they do. Then you have a number of regulators. The NRCS, National Regulator for Compulsory Specification, is just one of them. You have ICASA, also a regulator. You have the railway regulator. Yeah, you just said the regulators are many. And the role of regulators is to ensure that the products that are on the market that they control are safe. And they do that through standards. So what they do is that they take some of the standards that the SABS produce and make those compulsory. Otherwise, most standards that are out there are actually voluntary. They are voluntary in the sense that industry players agree that for this product, this is the minimum requirement between us, and government is not involved. So where government is involved, then we call those compulsory. So the role of the NRCS then is to select some standards and say, these are compulsory because these products will be unsafe unless they meet this minimum requirement. And then they have to enforce those. However, for them to really police and enforce, they need testing and certification, which is the work that the SABS do. So they will ask the SABS to look at some products and confirm that those products still meet the requirements, and then they will approve that those products can be sold. That's how it works. When we come to agreement has to do with building standards. They only deal with building standards where the building method is innovative and we don't have standards for it. So therefore that has to come to go through agreement where engineers will look at it and say, yes, this is fit for purpose. Otherwise, if it's a normal building, then we have to go through, use a standard that we find in the SABS, which is, they call it the 10400 standard. So, yeah, that's where this is.
Thank you very much. Let me say two things before I recognize you, Honorable Faba, that I was listening on SAFM this morning, them talking about mathematics, and someone raised the question, is mathematics a language? Now, what we find is that in international trade, we, who are the traders and governments, are developing our own languages, even on trade. We hear DTI always talking about the value chain. Now, on slide number 3, SABS is telling us what their value chain services are. And it's the stakeholder management that you have adequately spoken to, the standards, that's why they're the Bureau of Standards, and then also engagement on the international standards and having participated in meetings of the WTO. We see how that comes through all the time, but I'll raise further questions on that. Let me just hear, Honorable Chabangu, on the question that you raised. Are you covered particularly on the second one? You're partially covered, okay. You're going to speak further on that. Okay, let's have you first and then have Honourable Father.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I didn't want to neglect the three states. So, I think Dr. Damani covered the counterfeit goods part adequately over there. Just maybe to mention that we specialize in verification services. So we do partner with the regulators, and I mentioned ICASA, for example. So because we're not a regulator ourselves, everything is voluntary with our customers. But when we do partner with the regulator, they ask us to do that verification on their behalf. And so for ICASA, we can then make sure that no counterfeit goods come into the country that is electronic related. And we are in discussions with the health department and so on as well. So if other regulators do partner with us, we can assist them with that verification. On the marketing side, I do agree with the Honourable Member, Shivambo, in terms of we haven't marketed ourselves very well. What we have done is we were fixing things up. Right now, we've appointed a head of marketing, literally started last month, and we are going to be fixing that going forward as well. But we've got something to market now. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, he's smiling with you because he's Chabangu. But you named his leader, so he's content. Please, Honourable Father. And then I'm going to take a second drop. Honourable Father, kick off the second drop.
Perhaps he leaded the EFF out of the National Assembly when they were thrown out. Maybe that's where the whole thing came from. Now, Chairperson, I would just like to know, and I think you almost touched it. So the SABS is not a regulator, because it usually says SABS approved. For that reason, I thought you regulate it as well. So, as I say, this grey fluid starts warming up, unfortunately, only now, so it might even get worse, Chairperson. Just bear with me. Next thing, I heard someone talking about quality, you also looking at coal. Right, now, if you are testing coal, now I need to know from you, sir, if there's regulation on standards on coal. And then I would like to know, if there's a regulator on coal, are someone looking at the quality of coal, because the standards on coal must be of a certain level then, supposedly. And then I would like to know why Eskom, which is also one of our almost state entities, why have they been allowed to get substandard coal? And why was that not regulated? And then this is the question I want to ask you, because that is a fact, I know that the coal was not the same, and that is why the problems, there was problems, and they had to actually clean up at some of the huge coal plants, etc., because of the substandard of coal. So I want to know then, if there's a regulator, why wasn't that regulated? Why were they not put under the emphasis that they had to take their coal to the SABS to be tested? If you can perhaps give me a briefing on that, I'd really like to hear that. Thank you.
Okay. Honourable Khai is going to be the next opportunity, and Honourable Khai is also from the Eastern Cape, but he is also the chairperson of the other select committee that all of us serves on, that deals with issues of economic and business development.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thanks, SABS, for the presentation. Maybe we should just first comment the entity for the clean audit, but also 82% on the non-financial performance achievement. Just a question also on the revenue that you have been unable to get your target with regard to commercial activities. I see you have some reasons, but if you can elaborate why this time around, particularly the effort, you could not achieve your target with regard to the commercial activities. I think I must also follow up on this issue of the verification agent.
that the DTI will have to respond to that because for me it's an unfunded mandate that is given to the entity. Why give an entity an unfunded mandate to deal with the issue of verification? To the what is also what I see also under HR, there's a lot of turnover that is taking place in the entity, about 107 in one financial year, people leaving the entity. What could be the reasons? I know it's a mixture of reasons, dismissals, resignation, but I'm interested more on resignations. Why? Of course, this is supposed to be a very skillful area that where you need a lot of skill. I've seen in one of the, not in the document itself, in one of the reports of the portfolio committee, quarterly report, they say one of the targets that you have not been able to meet is the recruitment of a PhD candidate. That's what I saw. But now I'm trying to look at the issue of the termination when you actually supposed to be needing more people to work. The last point that is on the issue of how do you ensure, I think it's related to the issue that was raised by Honorable Chabang on the issue of fake staff. How do you ensure that your SABF mark is not abused? And if it is abused, what sort of action do you take? Thanks.
Thank you very much. Let me raise two questions and make one comment. The first question is, when we look, it's not fake, when we look at the quality of tires for motor vehicles, that are not conforming to the safety standards. Is SABS able to act on that? I know there's one country that I wouldn't mention here. I know which one it is, that supplies these cheap tires to the taxi industry. It's not China. It's not China. And we have been very concerned because taxi accidents happen and our citizens are killed. And we are sitting as parliamentarians and saying, but how exactly can we act against those low-quality products? That's the first question. My second question is your experience with DTI. Do you find that DTI is supporting you? They are doing properly in terms of their oversight of the work that you are doing. We had, for example, when we looked at another entity in DTI, been informed that there is a group in DTI that they engage with every 3 months. And we'd like to know whether DTI has that type of oversight of your work as well. My comment then would be one to say that I had the privilege to also work with SARS, not that it was my responsibility in SARS, but there, Honorable Chabangu, we looked at, I worked with civil society in SARS. I wasn't involved in the money collecting. No. We were investigating, but what we were investigating, you see, is that if you look at our ports and you look at our border posts, what would happen is that a country would label a product as curtains. The rate that they'll pay, the tariff for bringing curtains into South Africa, might be 5%. But if they bring in shirts or dresses, it will be 10%. So what they do is that they declare their consignment incorrectly so that they don't have to pay that tariff. But what we also found then, particularly in the music industry, that there's a lot of fake music coming into the country. So what SAPS would then do is that they will confiscate those goods and they will just destroy them. I was looking at a program on Australian airports, and I was amazed, honorable members, to learn how much cargo actually comes into South Africa through the airports. I thought that most of the cargo would come by sea, but there's quite a substantial amount. That's one thing. The other also, Honorable Chabangu, where it affects you in the Free State, you see. And that's why we have signed this agreement in SADC, where we will work together on trades and tariffs, is because a country will now bring their goods into the airport in Mbabane and then bring it from Mbabane by road, because they know that the border post wasn't as strict as what it would be at either the South African ports or the South African airports. And in that way, we get a number of the faked goods coming into the country. But as I'm talking about that, my third question just struck me. We know as well that there are some countries, let me mention Turkey, who's bringing in products that are dangerous. I am here particularly talking about their soft drinks and the amounts of sugar. And it's just an unhealthy soft drink. If you see it, it looks unhealthy. But they bring it in. They have shops and they sell it particularly to our township economies at reduced prices. But then also they bring in these things that the kids eat at school. You know, the equivalent to chicken flinks. Those products, I don't know what it is made of, but the chemicals that they have on those products are causing untold suffering in terms of the Department of Health to many of our children, because it sits on the chest of our children. So we have an increase in tuberculosis because of those cheap products coming in. My question is, who should we, as this committee, hold accountable to look at the importation and distribution of such products? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We'll deal with the questions as they arose. I'm going to leave the coal one, obviously, for DTI at the end to answer that. It was directed there. and I'm going to leave the revenue question to our CFO, so I'll deal with the others. In terms of the mark abuse one, yes, we are very aware of the mark being abused, but our strategy has been led by our ability in the past, and that is to rely on people coming to us and informing us that people are abusing our mark, and we then take action. We have secured successes in that in the last year. Over and above that, we literally will, part of our digitalization strategy, will be going live this month with a new system that we're actually going to be doing that proactively. So we're going to be scanning all websites, not just in South Africa, around the world, and we all places where people are abusing our mark, we're definitely going to be taking firm action around that. I do need to then just maybe say that where there are incidents of physical products that people are not marketing on their websites, we're not going to pick that up, you know, and that we're still going to be relying on, obviously, the public informing us. Part of our marketing strategy, we are looking at developing a type of a mobile application where people can actually be more proactive in terms of highlighting those nuances. However, people can go onto our website as well. It's a list of all the products that we have verified, and that does have our mark of approval as well. So that's on there. On terms of the staff churn, 107, but if you look at that, only 52 of it was resignation. So the others, I mean, we can't really control that. And of the 52, it's we got a soft complement of about 1,000 people. It's not much, and it's not a major cause of concern because our skill sets are obviously verification. Our testing officers and our auditors are very marketable. So if you look at ISO 9000, for example, every company out there is going to want to look for auditors, and it's so much easier coming to the SABS because you know you're going to have quality staff there. But it's not a cause for concern. We've got that under control. In terms of we're closing the gap in terms of our PhD and Masters, as I said earlier on, all our KPIs for this year will be a change or achieved other than the revenue one. Then in terms of the chair's questions, quality of tires, once again, we're not a regulator, you know, so I'm going to leave that one to the DTI to answer that as well. Where a regulator comes to us, remember, our work is purely voluntary. Where you see a market of approval, a customer chooses to work with us. We can't force and enforce a customer. However, if a regulator comes to us and says, I want you to be doing this, for example, like ICASA, then we can. Okay, but once again, we can't withdraw products. It's the regulator that can. But we'll do the work on behalf of them to verify things for them. The taking of the action has to come from them. Our experience with DTI support has been very good. We don't have any problems in terms of the support we have with them. We have regular meetings. In fact, we just had one yesterday with them. Obviously, from a finance point of view, we can do with them not cutting the grants, but in terms of the support, we don't have any issues. The Turkey products, once again, we're not a regulator. We can't control that. If the regulator does want to, us to assist, we can. And we certainly geared up for that as well. So, Boytam, in the revenue question, you want to pick that one up?
Thank you, members. In terms of our revenue, just to highlight to the members that only 23% of the revenue that we get is from grant funding. The remainder, which is about 77%, is income that is commercial. So the dynamics around, you know, competition and looking for business also apply to us as the SABS. However, you know, this was not necessarily the case prior to the regulatory split that we had, because SABNC and NRCS used to be one entity, and there was a split in 2008. And that split also, you know, enhanced the competitive environment in a sense that the NRCS, you know, didn't have to now use the SABS for testing. So we have to compete, you know, like any other entity. We have to, you know, apply for tenders, you know, we have to go through the same process. Now in meeting our revenue target, I think it has been challenging, you know, in the fact that, you know, the competition, you know, there's been a lot of laboratories coming up, there's been a lot of you know, competition, especially from your European entities providing certification services, where you find that you would bid the work, but, you know, it's those companies who would then, you know, get the work. So from a market perspective, it has been challenging. But I also think that, you know, as Ian has already said, we just need to then, you know, market ourselves more and be much, much more aggressive. Thank you.
Through you, Chair. Just to add in terms of the questions around what our involvement with the regulator is, it's just maybe to reassure members that we as the SABS are also proactively engaging with the different regulators so that we provide them the services to verify
in the different spaces where the regulator operate. One of the examples that Ian has already provided is the ICASA one, but we're also in several engagements with various regulators to make sure that that relationship takes root and that we avoid a space where we're not doing what we can do just because the regulator is not approaching us to ask for our services.
Just thinking, wants to hear that unfunded mandate. Continue, please talk.
Okay, thank you. On the unfunded mandate, this has to do with the verification. I guess what I can say is that the process or the program of industrial policy, that is the flagship of the department, it's actually a process of self-discovery and learning. So some of the initiatives that we embark on, we find out in implementing that perhaps we can tweak here and there and change our approach. And I think the verification is one of them. The minister has realized that there are some challenges that we are facing with verification and has asked the SABS board and the DTI to actually form a task team to look at that and other issues that we have some challenges with regarding the work that the SABS does. So this is one of the areas that we are going to look at intensively because we had expected that by now every product that's designated will be verified that is being produced in South Africa and to what extent before government can buy. But that has not really taken root, as the SABS is saying. So it is a challenge for us. It's a challenge for the SABS as well. If I can move on to the other question that has to do with the coal testing by Eskom. I think members know that Eskom is... it's both an implementer and as well a regulator. So in the area of coal, Eskom actually determine what quality they will accept. So if they don't stick to their own rules, it's very difficult for somebody outside to say you're not meeting those rules. So they don't necessarily have to ask a third party. And perhaps that talks to the importance of having third parties actually assisting you, which is one reason why the department decided that the SABS should be out there to assist every regulator and therefore take out the regulatory role from the SABS so that any regulator can now approach the SABS for help as a third party service provider instead. So we don't really have much of a say in terms of how Eskom approaches its quality of coal as such. But there are standards, and SABS has the capacity to do the testing that's required for coal. And SABS is doing that work, has been doing that work for, until they lost the contract at Richards Bay, they have been doing that for quite a lot of exporters that export coal through Richards Bay. So, yeah, the capability and the capacity is there. It's just for us, all of us, to use it, especially the government entities in that sense. When it comes to the quality of tires, there are compulsory standards that tires must meet. Then the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications actually have regulations that must be met. One of the challenges that we have currently is that there are no commercial labs that are set up as independent labs to test the tires. So when tires are inspected from the marketplace, the NRCS has to take those tires abroad for tests to be performed and then get reports whether those tires are meeting the specifications or not. And that is one of the difficulties that we have currently. We are looking at how can we address that challenge? in the era of budget cuts, it has been very difficult. We didn't feel that we should again insist that the SABS set up this facility unless there is we know how the demand dynamics are going to be like, because we want the facility to actually fund itself if it is set up. So we are still looking at that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You just raised one matter that worries me. When you mentioned that SABS no longer has the contract at Richards Bay, who is holding that contract now? Are you able to share that?
I think this happened 4 or 5 years ago that we lost the contract. And I think what happened there is that one of our employees actually set up, you know, left the SABS. It was assisted by a European company to set up a lab there, and they bid for the work, and they actually got the work. So that's what happened. I mean, we still have a presence at Richards Bay, like I said, because of, you know, to be able to service for export purposes, but it's not as significant as it used to be.
My point was, we mustn't compromise the quality of the export, so we have that. That's how the market economy works. You lose one and you win one. Honourable members, do we call that to a close, or are there any other questions? I think in my head there's lots of other things that I would still want to pursue. If we look at this thing of the tires, we need to give serious attention to it. Many of us could not start our work in this parliament this morning because the bus broke down, not because of the tires, but I looked at the buses that's bringing us here to parliament. Those tires are coming from Germany, and they're Goodyear. And I'm saying, but don't we have tire manufacturers in South Africa? Can't we buy the tires from them? But this thing of the taxi industry is really bad. I mean, most of the accidents on the roads are not caused by taxis, as some of us may think. But the number of deaths that we have in taxi accidents is a big concern, because the Department of Transport also reports to us. And you know, this thing of the deaths being counted during every holiday season in South Africa, if we can reduce that by introducing stricter controls, we know, as we've learned with Pakistan, that there's going to be a problem that those things might be certified by the bureaus, standard authorities in their own countries, and then through WTO arrangements come in here. But we're on top of those things to look at how we can deal with that. The second one is that we know that there is talk about introducing a sugar tax, because just too many of us are dying because of the amount of sugar. In this room, I know of two people who are diabetic, and I'm one of them. and therefore, it is becoming, as our eating habits change, a serious threat to us, and we can't subject our children to be even more exposed to that. If we can intervene, it's going to be important that we do that. Similarly, when we look at coal and we look at the contributions to the economy and things like that, I think all the questions has been very formulated based on some very serious concerns we have as members responsible for quality, as well as members responsible for fair competition and trade in South Africa. I noticed that Honorable Chibango wanted to have a last word, then we will close the session.
Thank you, Chair. My last question would be, the bridge that fell between Midrand and Sandton, was the material that was used SABC, SABS approved? Was it because of the negligence of the contractor? If yes or not, what did you do? Did you check as to whether it was a fault? Because that was the threat to South Africa as a whole. Thank you.
That's the last one.
Chair, I can't answer that. It's outside of the mandate of the SABS. You know, so if the contractor uses SABS products, then I don't know if it is or not, but how it's constructed is outside of our mandate. It's a voluntary service that we have. We're not a regulator or a police organization. So it is outside of our mandate to be able for me to answer that question.
And maybe just to assist, Ian is correct. That mandate would not sit with the SABS, but what had happened is that the Engineering Council of South Africa actually got involved with the investigation to check if it was a quality issue from a materials perspective or if it was a design issue from an engineering perspective. And the reports regarding that have not yet been released, but they are statutory bodies that have been looking at that, because I think the Engineering Council will report to the Department of Public Works.
Thank you very much. If I may add to that, that the mayor, the former mayor of Joburg, Parkstown, the MEC, because I'm from that province, the MEC for Transport, the Honorable Vadi, as well as the Premier, David Makura, all visited the site, and the agreement was that they would work with the engineers under the auspices of the Department of Public Works. But there is also the structure in KZN, which was a mall that they were building, that we had a similar problem. So that same team, or rather a similar team in KwaZulu-Natal, but we largely depend on the Engineering Council to do that type of investigation. But they report to the Department of Public Works on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members, for that engagement. Thank you very much to Ian and the team. We are very guilty as this group, because we are not as gender balanced as what you are. We are aware of that, and we want to commend you on that as well. We appreciate it, and we are looking forward to having this as a basis for improved communication on the work that you are doing, that we as a committee consider to be very important. Thanks very much for honouring our invitation to be with us today. You are excused. Honourable Members, the things that we need to look on, let me tabulate them to you first. I think it's going to take us 10 minutes to continue them, to complete them. Honourable Ntebe, we have to look at oversight at the study tour, at the tourism invitations, at the WTO law, and then at the jazz festival. So if you leave before then, you will lose out. On the oversight, Honourable Members, I can't hear you, man.
That we have a meeting next.
No.
ICC?
Eh?
The ICC?
I don't know about it.
When are you coming for ICC? It's on the program.
It's on the program.
Can I continue? I want to add another item before the jazz festival. Rebecca? I'm adding ICC. Okay, you'll speak to us on that. On the oversight, Martins, Please lead us on that. That's the logistics. No, he deals with the logistics, not the budget.
Yesterday I gave an update on to the MECO meeting yesterday in regards to only Mpumalanga, focusing on that one first. And in the meantime, simultaneously with that, we're running for the study one and for the Empress one. But
speak to us on the oversight.
Oh, the oversight thing. The document has been finalized. It's with the division manager to sign it off. I would have the warrants ready by tomorrow, Friday, for the latest day to book flights and accommodation. We will be staying in the Southern Sun, the Ritz Hotel in Witbank. And then we will drive from O.R. Tambo. I tried to group the delegation so that we all can arrive similarly around about 3 o'clock because in an hour and 20 minutes on the N12. So, but what I did is that Hanifa forwarded me a program, a draft program, so I slotted all the distance and it make it easier to read so members will have an idea how long we will be traveling and things like that. But that document will be presented tomorrow in our MENCO meeting too. That's just on the Mpumalanga one, sir.
Thank you. Let me be the first to raise a question. You informed me that some members will be traveling by road. Does it mean that Honorable Ntebe, for example, would travel to OR and join the common transport from there?
Sir, we have 5 members who will be traveling by car there to the OR Tambo. We have 3 T5s waiting there, sir. So we will leave as a delegation from there to the hotel in the bank, sir. But that is basically just the 5 members who will be driving to our Tambo, sir. And then you will be picked up at home and taken straight to the hotel on the shelf, sir.
Thank you very much. Honorable Khai has been doing very good in terms of managing this in the MENCO meeting. Any questions on the oversight? With your own car?
Yeah. So it's easier for me than to go to OR Tambo than I
program. Please talk to Martins about that. That's detail on the logistics. Don't answer now, Martins.
No, we spoke about it. It's not just clear that I personally, I don't know about that. But in my case, I said to him when we were preparing my itinerary, it's easier for me to drive than to go to OR Tambo and travel all the way back from where I come from.
Let me put it to you this way, because I don't want you now to be penalized because you're driving. Martins, if there's problems with getting Honorable Ntebe covered for the costs, talk to me, not now.
But talk to me so that
I can deal with that.
There's 5 members, but what I did say in my funding, I specify in my funding that 5 members will be traveling. So when they need to claim, only for mileage, please, members take note that you can only claim for mileage, not for damages to your whatever, but only mileage. Because I've encountered things like this. There's other things also members try to claim for, but I spoke with Adelga and she said, only mileage must be Erasmus. So the 5 members must be aware that they can only claim for that. But what I did say is that me and Tebe have a discussion around that, so that's all it's here.
I'm not happy with that. Because what now happens if he travels in kilometers?
Not mine.
Honorable Chabanga?
I was just saying, Martins misled me during the trip to Kaute. I had a tire burst. And then he said I must claim. I asked him on several occasions, should I claim? Because I had experience in as far as health is concerned. He said, yes. Yesterday I asked him, did you claim for me? He said, no, the manager said you cannot claim. But I'm aware of the fact that if ever there is anything that happens on your time, your insurance covers me everything. Thank you.
No, thanks for that understanding, Chamalo. Honorable members, I was looking at the silence of Honorable Mahwebu. And I thought that he must be upset with me because I did not apologize for the Honorable Lont. Kupeka, did we get apologies? Honorable Lont spoke to me personally. He also spoke to Honorable Chai. But can we ask you please that we get a formal, just a note so that we have something in writing. He did speak to us and we appreciate that he's not here with us. He won't be with us on the oversight either because of some other commitments that he explained to us. Then we covered in terms of the oversight, unless there's further questions. The program is, Kupeka, like finalized. Do you have copies here? Oh, Kupeka will distribute copies now, but that is not the final one. All right? We still need to just hear from the... But this is the different one as well from the one that you have, Abdullah. This one, yeah. Because I worked with Lupeka on the final touches on this one, Honorable Chai, yesterday afternoon after the meeting, where we made sure that we have the spelling, like for example, Evras, Eiffel, Steel, and Vanadium. And also... that we, another big thing that we changed here was that Ekandastria one, where you see we have from 9 until 11 the briefing by both the Maloto Corridor and the group from Ekandastria. So once we hit the road, we are not going to be subjected to briefing again. I said to Kupeka, we're not going there for briefings. But we must have the briefings so that we can understand the projects that we are visiting. So that's the almost final draft, Honorable Members. The reason why I'm spending this time is because we're not going to meet again before this. Right? We'll see each other again as a committee only at O.R. Tambo Airport. I'm doing that to also then say, if you have questions, let's raise them now. The next point, Honorable Members, is the study tour. We have worked, Kupeka and Grace has worked on that. They have the letter off to our high commissions. We have received a correspondence back from the High Commission in Malaysia. And they are asking us, Honorable Members, to submit two things. A copy of that first page of your passport, where your passport number and photo is in. What they normally do is that they clear us at the airports when we arrive there. That we don't have to go through the normal clearance procedures at the airports. Okay? The second thing that they want from us is a two-page summary of our CVs.
Thank you,
Jason. Two-page summary.
Because if I know I was a four-page policeman, then he held
it. But you still need to put that in. It's part of your CV.
I was intelligent that time. I don't know. So if it's intelligent, I'm not allowed to say anything.
Who will take you to court for that?
No, it's still protected by privilege. Don't worry. No.
Okay. Honorable Members, can we agree that we send this to Grace by today's Wednesday? By Friday of this week? Some of us may have our passports at home. Like myself.
You might make this up. Yeah, And I think
this is an
important part,
which
I'm trying to get behind. This CV...
Let's have one meeting, please.
This two-pages CV that you're talking about, I can only believe the reason why they're looking for a CV of a person. So, for instance, Vera, he is personally studying economics. He's been in trade and industry before he came to Parliament. So when they might have something that they present on this. They know that Gerard is the person that they will be able to talk to. They might, when it comes to the labor relations and stuff, they might see that Hussey has done certain things. So they know who to talk to on specific areas, and they can get experts perhaps to speak to them. I think maybe that is it. I don't think it's about seeing if I got standard 5 or a gas and if I really got standard 2 or whatever. So you hear what I'm trying to say, and this is why I was kind of making jokes about this. But I think maybe we must just get it straight, because for any of us as members to go and put, I can give them a 10-page CV, but I don't really think this is what they want from us. And this is why I'm just asking maybe members and through you, Chairperson, that something that is relevant towards our oversight trip, that we put that relevance there. I just think maybe that is maybe what we should do. And maybe if it's possible, Chairperson, we will not be able to do it in the next 2 days. But maybe we can next week start doing it in our constituencies, because we are all going to constituencies. We will be able to have the time to just make a two-page. And when we come back on this oversight, if it is all right with you, that we can then present it to our secretary, because I don't believe they're going to be in such a rush to have that information like in the next week. This is my personal opinion, Chair.
Let me do it this way, because if they ask for it, it's because they need it. I would say, for those who can do it, let's give it to Lorena by close of business this right. But I'm also saying, while I agree with you, Honorable Father, that doesn't apply to the passport. Let's get the first page of the passport to Grace by close of business on Friday. And then with the abridged CV,